Tesla helps Samoa. New moons discovered around Jupiter. Water has been found. Yes, liquid water has been found on Mars. SpaceX completes its double launches. The Hyperloop competition. Who won and what happened? The anniversary of the first moon landing and much more on this episode, episode 11 of This Week in Science. Now let's start off today with a little bit of Tesla news. Now there hasn't been too much Tesla stuff going on in the news this week, but there has been a bit. First of all, Tesla helped Samoa go full on green. The Samoa Islands are a group of small islands about 4,000 miles off the west coast of the United States. Tesla has deployed multiple microgrid projects across the islands of Samoa to help it get rid of costly and inefficient diesel generators. Also, the projects could support the islands for multiple days, even when a blackout occurs. Tesla has worked with the islands in the past, and now it is adding two more power pack projects at Fiega Power Station and Filaleo International Airport, which brings the total up for their projects up to 13.5 megawatt hours of energy storage across all of their power pack projects. The newest project is reported to cost around $8.8 million and is supported by its development partners, Samoa's development partners, that is, including the Asian Development Bank, the government of Japan, the government of Australia, the government of New Zealand, and the European Union. This is great to see Tesla helping places out like this, and it is great to see that many places like Samoa are going full green, you know, full on green, because they have the capacity with solar and wind to do so. So it is great that they are taking advantage of their space to go full on green. And they haven't gone yet, but I'm assuming that very soon they will be ditching every diesel generator, every other form of power except renewable energy. Anyway, it's really good. The source for this was Electric. Let's move on to our next story. Now let's talk about the Hyperloop competition. In Hawthorne, California, SpaceX hosted its third annual Hyperloop competition. Teams all around the globe came to see if their pod would surpass the rest and possibly even break a speed record or two. After a fierce competition consisting of teams speeding their Hyperloop designs through a three-quarter mile tunnel, which is 1.2 kilometers, it came down to three finalists: War Hyperloop, Delft University from the Netherlands, and EPF Loop from Switzerland. In the end, however, only one team could come out victorious, and that team was War Hyperloop, with their pod reaching over 284 miles per hour, or 457 kilometers per hour. This is the third time they have won the first place prize. War Hyperloop's pod was a 154-pound carbon fiber pod propelled by a 50-kilowatt electric motor. Congrats to War Hyperloop. This is pretty cool. I mean, I love to see that we have universities and other companies all around the globe just, you know, competing for this, because this could very well be the future of transportation, and competitions like these really help spur excitement, but also innovation, and hopefully, you know, we'll be riding in the Hyperloop very, very soon. The source for this was The Verge. And now let's kick off this week's volley of seemingly never-ending space news. Liquid water found on Mars. For many, many years, scientists have pondered the idea of liquid water on Mars, and now we have just found it. This year has been full of amazing Mars discoveries, from finding organic compounds on Mars to now finding H2O. A team led at the University of Bologna have now detected a lake of liquid water 20 kilometers or 12.4 miles wide and about 1.5 kilometers or 0.9 miles below the surface of Mars' southern ice cap in a region called Planum Australe, which I believe it's how it's pronounced, but it could also be Planum Australe, but I'm going to say Planum Australe. Now, the team believes dissolved salt from close-by minerals is keeping this reservoir of water from freezing. The group used the Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionosphere Sounding, or also known as MARSIS or MARSIS, which is an instrument aboard the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft. MARSIS uses electromagnetic radar waves, to deduce what material is below Mars's surface. It was actually quite a few years ago that the team believed there was H2O pools beneath the surface, but until now it went unconfirmed. This discovery, coupled with many other new Mars breakthroughs, increases the chance of life on Mars, or at least its potential to host it. The source for this was Futurism. What an amazing breakthrough discovery. Scientists find Martian dust source. You probably heard of the global Martian dust storm currently enveloping the planet, but what does all that dust come from? Scientists now believe that they have found the largest source of dust on the Red Planet. The suspect is known as the Medusae Fossae Formation, which is a 600-mile or 1,000-kilometer area near Mars's equator. The article says, quote, "Mars wouldn't be nearly this dusty if it wasn't for this one enormous deposit that is gradually eroding over time and polluting the planet, essentially," end quote, said study co-author Kevin Lewis from Johns Hopkins University, end quote. They found this out by looking at river data that show the Martian dust makeup, which had a, quote, "very distinct sulfur to chlorine ratio," end quote, that, when compared to that of the Medusae Fossae Formation, matched up perfectly. The formation is shedding so much dust, in fact, that over 3 billion years, the quantity of dust could be anywhere from a 6.5-foot or 2-meter global layer, so 6.5 feet of dust all around the planet, all the way up to a 39-foot to 12-meter global layer, which is just insane. The source for this was CNET. Twelve new moons discovered around Jupiter. Another big discovery this week. On July 17th, 2018, scientists announced that they have discovered 12 new moons orbiting Jupiter. That raised Jupiter's total number of moons to 79, the most of any planet in the solar system, end quote. Like the Mars discovery we just discussed, researchers had a hunch this was there for a while, since around the spring of 2017. It was an unintentional discovery. The team was actually searching for the huge fabled planet, often referred to as Planet 9, when they found these extra moons. This brings Jupiter's total moon count up to 79 moons, though 26 of those moons are still awaiting confirmation, though we are pretty sure they exist. This is pretty insane. Just a cool fun fact, too. Quote, "It is also likely that Jupiter's smallest known moon is less than 1 kilometer in diameter," end quote, said the leader of the team who made this discovery, Scott Shepard. The source for this was NASA. I do apologize for reporting this late. Actually, it happened late last week. I had it in my script. I just forgot to say it or report on it in the podcast, so I do apologize, but it's a pretty cool discovery. I mean, Jupiter just seems to have more and more moons. It's just insane. But anyway, great discovery. Pretty cool. Again, I apologize for reporting this late. And again, the source for this was NASA. Now let's talk about SpaceX's successful back-to-back launches. This past week, SpaceX has launched two launches, just 3 days apart from each other. The first of these launches was the Telstar 19 Vantage mission. Now that mission involved a Falcon 9 Block 5 lifting off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, and carrying a 15,600-pound or 7,076-kilogram broadband satellite that will cater to North and South America. It launched at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the 22nd of July, and the whole mission took roughly 40 minutes. Also, as per usual, SpaceX successfully landed the rocket's first stage on the drone ship, Of Course I Still Love You. Now back to that satellite. It actually broke a record. The Telstar 19 Vantage was the heaviest commercial communication satellite ever built and launched, which is a pretty cool fact. Again, it weighed 15,600 pounds or 7,076 kilograms, which is pretty insane for a satellite. The second mission was on the 25th, and it was located at Vandenberg Air Force Base, California, just 3 days later. This mission, the Iridium 7 Next mission, contained another Falcon 9 Block 5 rocket, just like the first launch, launching off Vandenberg Air Force Base at 4:39 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time on the 25th. The rocket held 10 Iridium Next satellites, which it deployed periodically in 90-second intervals once it reached its desired location. Now, the F-9's booster gracefully landed on Of Course I Still Love You's brother, just read the instructions. SpaceX also attempted catching the fairing using Mr. Stevens' upgraded net and a parafoil, but that plan was sadly foiled. See what I did there? Because of unfavorable weather conditions. Maybe next time. The sources for this were CNET and Teslarati. CNET was the first article, and Teslarati was the latter. Virgin Galactic tests its spaceship too. Around 9 a.m. Pacific time, Virgin Galactic tested its space plane spaceship, too. The plane, known as VSS Unity, took off from the Mojave Air and Spaceport in California. The flight lasted about 20 minutes before the spaceship, too, landed back down. If you're wondering how one of these space planes work, I'll give you a quick explanation. Quote, "Instead of launching vertically, a jet-powered craft called the White Knight 2, or WK-2, takes off horizontally like a plane, carrying a SS-2, or Spaceship 2 up to its launch altitude of 15 kilometers or 9.4 miles. The SS-2 or the Spaceship 2 then separates from the carrier vehicle and flies into the upper atmosphere. Both craft later land on a runway just like planes, end quote. According to the company Virgin Galactic, the mission of this test launch was to gather more data on supersonic flight aerodynamics as well as thermodynamics. Now, the company CEO says that he hopes to be flying on one of these Spaceship 2s later this year up to space, so we'll see if his optimistic goals can be achieved. Now, the source for this was Futurism. A solar storm has just passed. Today's forecast, sunny and hot, with a chance of a solar storm. Okay, that might have been a joke, but this is actually true. Quote, hot gases are surging from a hole in the sun's atmosphere, sending powerful solar winds full of charged particles through space and towards our planet, end quote. In other words, a solar storm will be coming our way. The winds, quote-unquote winds, caused by these particles, quote, build to a minor geomagnetic storm between 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or the NOAA, predicts, end quote. These storms can interfere with the Earth's magnetic field, which can cause very light disturbances for certain things such as power grids or GPS. And on the severe side, it can even cause issues with animals' migration. Now, a quick note, this already happened last Tuesday, so it already has passed, and you probably didn't even know about it. Like I said, citizens of Earth didn't even realize that the planet's magnetosphere easily warded off most of the particles and its effects, so we didn't really know. The source for this was Newsweek. Let's discuss an upcoming lunar eclipse. Today, which is this Friday, which is the 27th, the longest lunar eclipse of the century will occur. This lunar eclipse, also known as a blood moon, will be the second this year, and it will be a long one. The blood moon will last approximately an hour and 43 minutes, making it, like I just mentioned, the longest in the century. Those in Middle Eastern areas and many parts of Europe will see a rust-colored moon, hence the blood moon nickname. People in other parts of the world, sadly, will not be so lucky to see it. So if you're in North America, sadly, you won't get to see this phenomenon. Also, Mars will be at its brightest during the eclipse, and this phenomenon is known as, quote, Mars in opposition, end quote. You'll be able to see that in North America and pretty much all the world, unlike the rust-colored moon that's only exclusive to the Middle Eastern areas and Europe. If you'd like to know the science of a lunar eclipse, check out my This Week in Science episode 7 for a quick rundown. The source for this was The Verge. A new way to find planets and stars. Stars and other spacefaring objects have long evaded finding because of one fact. Oftentimes, they're just too bright. Now, our research team, led by Jules Hojemakers, are trying out a new method. They took images from the Very Large Telescope in Chile of a star known as Beta Pictoris B, which is about 63 light-years away from Earth and is several times more massive than Jupiter. Using a method called spectroscopy, the team divided the light in the images of the Pictoris B, or Beta Pictoris B, into wavelengths, showing its chemical composition, among other things. Using the images, the research team took on the painstaking task of comparing the images pixel by pixel to the known signals of four molecules, CO2 or carbon dioxide, water, methane, and ammonia. Quote, a match indicated the presence of a given molecule in the star system. When the astronomers searched for methane and ammonia, Pictoris B remained invisible, end quote. However, when they searched for H2O and CO2, quote, the planet bloomed into view, end quote. This means that there was H2O and CO2 present in the planet's atmosphere. By using this relatively new technique, researchers were able to obtain a direct image molded out of the molecules in the exoplanet's atmosphere. These quote-unquote molecule maps could open up whole new doors for scientists, as objects that were either too bright and too difficult to observe may now be able to reveal themselves, at the same time revealing much more information about the cosmos. The source for this was Atlantic. Cannibal Andromeda? Quote, new simulations show Andromeda absorbed the large galaxy M32P about 2 billion years ago, end quote. Using new simulations, scientists have now been able to deduce that the Andromeda galaxy, quote-unquote, crashed into the Milky Way's smaller sibling, M32P, and absorbed it, leaving only small remnants behind. A little background on the Andromeda Galaxy. It is a spiral galaxy like ours, with a unique halo of stars orbiting its outskirts, and it contains a dense satellite galaxy known as M32. Heretofore, scientists believe this halo was a result of Andromeda devouring hundreds of smaller galaxies, but that may not be the case. Now, many astronomers sent up a press release saying that the halo hadn't been formed gradually from other small galaxies, but rather from a single giant galactic quote-unquote meal. They also said that through the stars contained in the halo, we could reconstruct and find out what the galaxy that Andromeda 8 was like. Quote, "We realized we could use this information of Andromeda's outer stellar halo to infer the properties of the largest of these shredded galaxies," end quote. Richard D'Souza, the lead author of the paper, said, "The model that has been constructed shows us that a majority of the stars in this halo are around 2 billion years of age. Collectively, the stars in the halo account for 1/5 of the stars in Andromeda as a whole," quote, "suggesting a massive galactic collision and burst of star formation activity in the past," end quote. Also, the stars in the halo are made up of elements that are heavier than hydrogen and helium, hinting that it was at one time the core of the galaxy that Andromeda devoured. It still isn't completely proven, and many scientists call for more detailed simulations to understand exactly what happened, but one thing's for sure. At some point in the distant past, galaxy giants Andromeda and M32P collide to form one bigger galaxy. I will definitely update you on this in the future if anything happens. It's pretty fascinating. The source for this was Smithsonian. Europa's ice thinner than expected. As we talked about earlier this week in science episodes, you may know that Jupiter's moon Europa may have life on it, nicely protected and hidden away under thick layers of ice. But here's the thing, new evidence may show that evidence of life is only inches below the moon's icy surface. A group of JPL researchers, now claim that, quote, even in areas exposed to the harshest radiation, you may not need to dig down more than 20 centimeters, end quote. Here's how it would be possible. Even in places where Jupiter's radiation is most harsh, amino acids, essentially the building blocks of protein, could survive just 4 to 8 inches down. Amino acids could get shot out of the earlier observed geysers we talked about on earlier this week in science episodes, then fall back in the ground where they could get covered in deposits, therefore protecting them by Jupiter's harsh radiation. This means that it would be much easier than expected to get a sample. All you would need to do is drill down a foot at most to get possible evidence of life on Europa, since if there are amino acids on Europa, there is life. Now, the source for this was Popular Science. And we have a great story to wrap up this week's This Week in Science with. Now, remembering Apollo 11, last Friday marked the 49th anniversary of the first moon landing. Two men, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, stepped foot on our own satellite, which is technically what the moon is called, almost 5 decades ago. The mission's goal was to send a manned crew up to the moon, which it succeeded in, set up a camera to broadcast the landing back to Earth, which it succeeded in, and to deploy a solar wind experiment, which it succeeded in. The trip opened up a whole new chapter of humanity, despite a tsunami of new breakthroughs and discoveries. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty awesome to think that just 5 decades ago, we were on the moon, and I cannot wait till we're celebrating the anniversary of the first manned crew mission to Mars, because that would be just amazing as well, and I hope we can do that within the next 5 decades as well. The source for this was NASA. And that's all I got for this week's This Week in Science. Now, I mean, there were a lot of articles, way more than the past few weeks. I think I had about 18 articles to do, so it was just a ton of work. I spent all night, 5 hours preparing these notes, but I hope it's worth it. I hope you've learned something, or I hope I've helped you stay in touch or stay in the loop with the scientific and technological community, because that's my goal with this podcast. Thank you so much. If I missed anything, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or if you just want to, just say anything to me, I guess, really, there are two ways you can reach me. One, tweet me at @TWISciPodcast, @TWISciPodcast on Twitter. You can also follow me there for updates, and I'll also retweet important news articles that maybe don't make it into the show time to time. Now, also, you can email me at twisidepodcast@gmail.com, at twisidepodcast@gmail.com. Personally, it probably would be easier, in my opinion, to go onto Twitter, but either way, works perfectly fine. Now, I do apologize that I've been jumbling up my words a bit for this episode. You know, it's pretty late. It's almost 10 o'clock, and I'm just groggy right now, so I do apologize. I probably need to get to bed after this. So sorry for jumbling up my words today. But I have an exciting announcement to make before I go. Just a little teaser. So I've been in touch with someone, or actually multiple people, in my home state of Minnesota. And we're going to do something pretty special, which I've kind of teased this on my Twitter. I don't want to reveal it completely yet, but I'll say one thing. And one thing is, tune into the radio. I'll tell you more on my Twitter account, so follow me there if you want to know more there. But that's just a little teaser. I'll tell you on probably around Wednesday next week. So stay tuned for that. Also, I'll talk about it on This Week in Science, excuse me. But yeah, there's a little bit something special going on next Thursday, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. If you want, just subscribe to the podcast. It doesn't have to do anything with it. Monetary value. All it means is that it'll automatically download to your subscription box every time it uploads. So just subscribe to my podcast. That'd be great. Also, leave a review, preferably a good review, because that really helps the podcast out and really helps other people discover it as well. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. Thank you for the continued support. You'll find out what the surprise is next week, and goodbye.